This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. As President Joe Biden spent his first weekend in office, the U.S. reached a staggering 25 million coronavirus cases. Biden has shared a number of goals for tackling the pandemic, but concerns are growing about whether his plans stand a chance against new coronavirus variants discovered in the UK and South Africa. Where are we in the fight against COVID-19? Here to bring us up to speed is virologist Angela Rasmussen. She's an affiliate at the Georgetown Center for Global Health Science and Security. Angela, it's great to have you back.
It's great to be back, Jen. Thanks.
I want to start with the new COVID-19 strain that's been identified in South Africa. How is it different from the strain found in the UK and the strain found in Brazil or the original coronavirus?
So all of these different variants have different mutations. And while some of them, such as the UK, South African, and Brazilian variants that you mentioned, have some mutations in common, they also have different mutations that are unique to them, suggesting that they all arose independently as part of different lineages of the virus as it circulated in different populations around the world. So they have some things in common. They have some things that are different. But one thing that they have in common that is the worrisome component of this is that they do appear to be more transmissible than the other variants that have been circulating up to this point in the pandemic.
Is it unusual for a virus to split off into all these different strains?
Absolutely. So every time an RNA virus like coronavirus replicates, which is what it does when a virus gets into you, that's what viruses are evolutionarily driven to do, to find a host to replicate and make more viruses, they can make mistakes when they're copying their genetic material. And those mistakes are called mutations. Sometimes those mistakes, which happen randomly, accidentally allow the virus some type of advantage. Either they let the virus replicate to higher levels. They might make it so that you need to be exposed to a lower dose of the virus to be infected, things like that. If a virus acquires a mutation that allows it to have such an advantage, then it will become the dominant variant. And that's exactly what we're seeing with these variants that have emerged.
Now, the Brazil and UK strains are already present in the U.S. How are scientists tracking whether or not the variant from South Africa will also show up here?
So one thing that we have realized is that we are not doing anywhere near enough genomic surveillance. And what that is when people have a diagnosed case of coronavirus, we actually sequence the virus. So we take a look at its entire genome and what that can tell us in relation to other viruses that have been sequenced. The UK discovered the B117 variant because they do an awful lot of genomic surveillance. They sequence about 10% of all the viruses that they find circulating in their population. We were doing much less than 1%. So we have stepped up our efforts to do more genomic surveillance, and we'll be looking for that South African variant, which is called B1351, as we continue to sequence more and more viruses and conduct more of the surveillance activity.
Now, Moderna and Pfizer say their COVID-19 vaccines protect against the new variant, but they're more effective against the strain found in the UK than the one found in South Africa. What more do we know about this?
So we don't know much about this right now, but Moderna did an experiment where they took serum, so the liquid component of blood, which contains antibodies, and they tested it against the spike protein from the South African variant. And they found something that's a little concerning, but right now it's really just a warning, and that is that there was a six-fold reduction in neutralizing antibody titers. That means that the antibodies in that serum were six times less likely to neutralize that virus, which is effectively rendering it non-infectious. So that seems pretty bad, and that is concerning. But the good news is that the vaccinated serum was still able to neutralize. So it had less of these neutralizing antibodies, but still had enough of them that it probably will be effective. But one thing that people should keep in mind is that this is an indication that some of these variants may be less effectively neutralized by antibody responses generated by these vaccines, which is why Moderna has, I think, taken the very wise step to proactively begin reformulating their vaccine for potential use as a booster, meaning that you would get a slightly different formulation of the Moderna vaccine as a third shot, and that would protect you against these emerging variants that do show reduction in neutralizing antibody activity.
And so for people who have started on the Pfizer vaccine, what does this mean for them?
So the Pfizer vaccine, I think we can assume is probably very, very similar in its profile. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines both are to the full-length spike protein of coronavirus, so they should be inducing relatively similar antibody responses in people. I think it would probably be a wise move for Pfizer to also consider testing out a booster shot that has been reformulated to account for these emerging variants.
And what does this mean longer term as we see these new strains emerge, even for people who have been vaccinated? What does this mean for us down the road?
I think what this means is that if we don't get transmission down, if we don't get a lot of people vaccinated to give the virus fewer opportunities to continue evolving, then we may be in a situation in the future where we are seeing variants that are not very effectively neutralized by antibodies elicited by the vaccines we currently have. That may mean that, similar to an annual flu shot, we have to go in and get periodic boosters of updated vaccines. But I want to caution people that's not the situation right now. And we can potentially avoid that because we don't know of any variants right now that are completely able to escape the vaccines. The way those variants would emerge is by additional mutation, which requires additional replication. So if we can get people protected by the vaccine, as well as take precautions to reduce transmission in the community, that's going to reduce the opportunity that the virus has to continue evolving. That means that maybe those variants actually won't emerge after all.
We're getting the latest coronavirus updates from virologist Angela Rasmussen. Now, Angela, early data showed that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are 95% effective, but just remind us when that efficacy kicks in.
So that efficacy kicks in 1 to 2 weeks after the second shot. There is some partial protection after the first shot, after about 2 weeks, but it's not at that 95% efficacy level. So people really need to, when they're getting the vaccine, they need to realize that the day that they get their first shot, and my parents actually got their first shot today, the day that they get their first shot is not a time to take off your mask, to go back to normal. You should continue taking precautions to protect yourself and others from exposure to the coronavirus until your immunity has had an opportunity to kick in. And even then, people really should continue to take these precautions until we know more about how the vaccines protect against transmission. We know that the vaccines are highly efficacious at protecting against symptomatic COVID-19, but we're still learning more about how well they protect against transmission. Now, my suspicion is that they will protect very effectively against transmission, but we don't know that for sure yet. So just wear those masks a little bit longer until we can find this out. It should only be a couple more months.
Well, American pharmaceutical company Merck is discontinuing the development of its two COVID-19 vaccines. This comes after early data suggested they weren't effective enough. What other vaccines are in development right now that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, right now, I mean, there are over 300 different candidates in the pipeline being developed right now, all sorts of different vaccine technologies. But the ones I'm most interested in are the ones that are most likely to come to the market very soon. And those are the Johnson & Johnson and Novavax vaccines. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is an adenovirus vectored vaccine. So it's different than the mRNA vaccines. It uses a harmless virus called adenovirus to deliver the spike protein that you'll develop immune responses to. And a big advantage of that is that the Johnson & Johnson phase 3 clinical trials have included a trial arm that looks at only one shot. So it might be a single shot regimen. If that's as efficacious as the mRNA vaccines, that would be a huge game changer, both in terms of supply and being able to distribute that more widely. The Novavax vaccine is a protein subunit vaccine similar to the hepatitis B vaccine. That's where you're effectively injected with the spike protein itself that's produced in a lab. That had very promising preclinical data in non-human primate studies. It did show complete protection against infection and transmission, as well as against symptomatic disease. So I'm looking forward to seeing the results of both of those clinical trials. I think the more vaccines we have on the market available to people, the better, because that means that we'll be able to vaccinate more people in more places more quickly.
Well, the practice of wearing two masks generated a lot of buzz last week during Joe Biden's inauguration when several attendees were seen double masking. The CDC has not officially endorsed this, but do we know whether it's more effective than wearing one mask?
Well, in general, if you wear a mask that has more layers, that's going to be more effective than just wearing a single layer mask. So in that sense, double masking, I think, could be very helpful. What I'd caution people about, though, is that double masking is not necessarily a better option than wearing a mask that has multiple layers and potentially a disposable filter inside. I think that, you know, people should be wearing high quality masks. They should be wearing masks that provide protection. But double masking is just one option among many.
We're talking to virologist Angela Rasmussen. She's an affiliate at the Georgetown Center for Global Health, Science, and Security. We're getting an update on the latest COVID-19 news. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're getting the latest on the COVID-19 pandemic with virologist Angela Rasmussen. She's an affiliate at the Georgetown Center for Global Health, Science, and Security. Angela, we got this question from Kokomo Kid, who asks, could other companies make the Moderna and or Pfizer vaccine under license to increase availability? We know availability is a huge issue right now.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer is yes. Why that's not happening, though, my answer is I don't know. Certainly the technology could be licensed and there are other facilities that can manufacture those vaccines. But I suspect that there may be more business reasons why that's not happening, although it really should, because as the caller points out, we really do have a problem with vaccine supply.
Well, one of the interesting things that are happening right now is that you may live in a household where you and other family members may be at different vaccination tiers. So I'm at one tier. My husband is near the bottom of the list. What guidance do you have for people who may be vaccinated earlier than other members of their household?
So for those people, and this is a really important question, Jen, and I'm so glad that you asked it. For those people who are vaccinated and around other unvaccinated people, whether they're in their workplace, their household, or out just in the world, everybody should continue to take precautions as if they were not vaccinated. And the reason for that, as I was talking about a little bit before, is that we just don't know how effectively these vaccines can prevent people from transmitting the virus to others. Now, the preclinical data in monkeys suggests that these vaccines do offer some partial protection against infection and virus shedding. But that's not complete. And because we don't know that, and that wasn't evaluated evaluated in the clinical trials because it would have taken longer to do the clinical trials had it been. We really do need to take precautions to make sure that there isn't transmission occurring in households from vaccinated people to unvaccinated people who won't have the same type of protection against symptomatic disease.
And where are we right now with public, I guess, understanding, support of being vaccinated? Something we've talked about quite a bit is concern around vaccine hesitancy.
So nationally, polls suggest that people are actually warming up to the vaccine. Right now, we are in a situation where the demand greatly exceeds the supply of vaccine. But people are saying that, you know, now that they've seen more people getting vaccinated, including some people within their communities, including their healthcare providers, they are feeling more confident about the vaccine. But we still do have a long way to go. And I think one of the things that's so challenging about this is that different communities have different reasons for being skeptical of the vaccine. It's going to take, I think, a lot of work meeting these communities, addressing their specific concerns, meeting them where they are, to try to get people confident that these vaccines are, in fact, safe and effective, and it's something they should do as soon as they can. I think that having the distribution problems that we've had is not really helping in the regard that these are safe and effective, because just the distribution system in many places has been such a mess that it doesn't do a lot to build confidence. So I think it's going to be really important in the coming weeks to not only communicate, you know, that the vaccines are in fact safe and that people should consider taking them, but also you know, giving the message that the vaccine is our long-term way out of this pandemic. And so people should really get their questions answered, their concerns should be addressed, and hopefully they will come around to realizing that these vaccines are, in fact, the way that we end this pandemic.
That's virologist Angela Rasmussen. She's an affiliate at the Georgetown Center for Global Health Science and Security. Angela, it's always great to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure, Jen. Take care.
And we'll talk to Angela again next week for our monthly vaccine call-in show.